News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
It's 6:38, you're listening to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall. The Dublin-based financial payments startup Plink has just raised €25 million in a funding round to finance the expansion of its money messaging app to international markets. Charles Dowd, co-founder of Plink, joins us in studio. Charles, before we get into what you're going to do with the money and how fast you're going to use it, what exactly does Plink do?
Good morning. Thanks a million. So Plink was created in response to the need that people have where there's awkwardness between small amounts of money between friends in social situations, like for beers or for taxis or for rent or Netflix or whatever. And we created Plink essentially as a money messenger. So it's a messenger where you can have one-to-ones or small group chats where you can exchange money instantly and for free. And that it's created essentially so that you can have those conversations initially about money. It's on the App Store and the Play Store. You can just download it in Ireland and start using it right away.
And in order for people to have those chats specifically about money and then to make transfers to themselves, they need to load the app with some funding in advance. Is that it?
That's correct. Yeah, Plink is your social wallet, I guess. You know, so it's about social payments. So yeah, you keep a store of value in Plink, and you can load it directly from a bank account, and then you can exchange it. You can exchange value instantly inside chats, so that people aren't waiting around for the actual money to arrive. And when the money arrives in your Plink account as a receiver, you also have a MasterCard issued against that. So wherever MasterCard's accepted online or in apps, or even in Apple Pay and Android Pay coming soon, you can actually just use the money right away.
So it's not just that it allows free and easy and less awkward transfers between pals or family members or whatever, but you can then spend that money when it comes.
Yeah, that's very important. If you think about really, Plink is like cash. So if I give you 10 euros, it moves to you instantly.
Feel free, yeah.
Yeah, no problem. Here you go. It moves to you instantly. It moves, and the full value arrives to you, so I guess it's free. And then you can spend it right away. So we've actually, we tried to replicate that functionality, but inside a messenger instead.
Now, you're only 2 years old. You're effectively a seed company 2 years ago. And now you have €25 million of Series A funding, principally from overseas investors. They must see huge potential in this expanding rapidly overseas.
Yeah, so we always knew that this is what we needed. So you talked to our original investors, said we were very lucky to be supported by Delta Partners and David Bowles in there, and David Tighe in the Bank of Ireland, the innovation team, and the guys up in NDRC like Gary Layden. Those guys saw the potential in us right away, but like the original business plan we brought to them said we need €26 million to be able to execute on our plan. And so we used the initial $750,000 to actually validate the market, validate the problem, validate the product. And that allowed us to go directly to these investors to actually say, this is what we need to do. And they said, yes, somebody needs to do this, and you need to move fast in this market. So
because there are competitors out there doing the same thing, I presume.
Yeah, there are a lot of people, approaching this in different ways and trying to actually solve this problem, which is the awkwardness between people. This is our primary focus. This is all we do. We only do person-to-person. We're not trying to do merchant payments. We're just saying person-to-person payments are a big problem and we want to fix it.
And what are the markets that you're targeting? Are they principally markets that have a large youth demographic? Because I presume that's your target market in many ways. And then how do you get the message out there that you're actually there and present?
Yeah, our market is sort of 18 to 24-year-olds. We through our partner, we're licensed in the EEA, which means all the European countries, really, and a few others. Initially, we're going to focus on the Eurozone countries, which is about 350 million people or so. And the 18 to 24-year-old age group, you know, they're used to things moving instantly. You know, messages move instantly. Everything moves instantly. So we make money move instantly for them. And our next market outside of Ireland will be Spain and Portugal, which have a very similar demographic to what we're looking for.
And people will hear about you literally through word of mouth, will they?
Yeah, through word of mouth. And we approach our marketing is, you know, initially is in universities, campus by campus. And so these are really sort of dense, socially connected groups.
You're employing 20 new people immediately?
That's the plan. Well, over the next 18 months, we want to add to the sort of engineering team, growth teams. We're on plink.me, www.plink.me. There's a career site there. You can see all the different things we're trying to hire for.
And finally, going right back to the start, you said that these transfers between people will be free for them. How are you going to make your money?
is the so Plink is free and will be free forever for person to person transactions, and it's very important that we state that, and that means what it is. When we look at the monetization strategy, which is not a big focus for us right now, but what's happening is people want to get invited into the conversations people are having with money. We will have those conversations in our product, and I think people will pay us to have access to those conversations. But
mainstream financial institutions.
Yeah, I think mainstream financial institutions and other brands, like, you know, food delivery companies, marketplaces. And what we find, though, is that people will have to invite them in. I mean, like, you know, it's like... you know, you can't force your way into a conversation that's private with people. You'll have to get invited in, so you'll have to add a lot of value to get there. So it's very important.
Fascinating.
Thank you.
To an oldie like myself. Charles Dowd of Plink, thanks indeed for joining us. Now, to a different subject. Ireland's growing, increasingly well-educated and ageing population is creating a strong market for alternative property investment here. That's according to a report just published by commercial property agent CBRE and Future Analytics Consulting. And Marie Hunt, Executive Director with CBRE, joins us. Marie, I suppose... this report just published, and it looks at student accommodation. It looks at the need for more healthcare facilities. But I suppose the main newsworthy focus is this build to rent market, and your belief that there's huge attraction in investing in that market in Ireland.
I suppose it's something we've seen happening globally over the last couple of years, and there would be a lot of niche players that only invest in build to rent, but it's a complete new concept for the Irish market, because we've never built long-term rental accommodation that's purely designed and built and intended for use for long-term rental. So it's at a very embryonic stage in Ireland, but there certainly is a wall of institutional capital looking to invest in it.
Now, we see IRES REIT, I suppose the publicly quoted REIT, they have largely bought purpose-built build-to-rental accommodation, but they're also building some. But they're probably the only large-scale player in that market, in the build-to-rent market here at the moment. Do you believe there's other capital, not only other capital waiting to come in from outside, but other players as well?
I think that's true. I think since 2012 we've had IRES and other players. In fact, we've had about 5,000 residential units have been sold, mainly to Canadian and US buyers in what they term multifamily. But I think what's different about what they've done versus what's happening now is they bought existing stock, which was probably built to sell initially, and retrofitted it, and beginning to start building their own new stock now. But I think build to rent is quite a different concept, where from the very design stage the product is quite different to what went before, in that the design of the schemes have a lot of communal space, so gyms and business lounges and communal sitting rooms and kitchens and facilities like that, that are built from day one, and they're built for long-term rental in mind, as opposed to converting something that was built for an alternative purpose.
What scale of capital do you think is out there waiting to invest, I suppose primarily in Dublin and other urban centres, and is it largely overseas capital, or is there some way of channeling investment by local investors as well?
Well, I mean, we know in the UK there's about 27 billion chasing build to rent specifically. In Ireland's case, we estimate that it's around 3 billion euro, up to 3 billion euro, chasing build to rent opportunities. Most of the money is overseas money at the moment, and mostly from niche players who invest in build to rent in other jurisdictions, predominantly US, UK, and to a lesser extent Germany and Spain, and are now looking seriously at Ireland because of the fundamental issue we have here being a severe shortage of supply.
Aren't they going to face the same constraints? Whoever they use to build these facilities, aren't they going to face the same constraints as local builders here? Either lack of sites or lack of, well, not lack of funding, I suppose, but lack of sites, and also perhaps a cultural disposition for Irish people to look for houses rather than apartments?
Well, I think they're looking very seriously at, you know, demographics, and they're looking at the results of the most recent census. And in the last 10 years alone, we've had 174,000 additional households renting accommodation. So the mood is changing. And in fact, we've moved from a home ownership rate that was 80-20 10 years ago to one that's 70-30 now. So there is this propensity towards renting. And I think some of the investors looking at the Irish market can see that happening. They face the exact same challenges as other developers in terms of trying to source sites and develop accommodation. So build to rent won't work on every single site in a Dublin context, but there are locations, particularly on transport nodes, where build to rent is a great solution. And I think from Ireland's case, it has the ability to deliver scale quickly.
And is there a role perhaps for agents like yourselves to link up the people with the capital overseas, these specialist capital providers, with perhaps builders here who may have sites but who don't have capital?
I think there's certainly a role for ourselves in trying to marry that. Most of the money so far, as I said, is institutional money coming from overseas. Some of those will want to be involved in the entire process from funding, developing, operating and managing. Others will want to do part of that. So there certainly is opportunity for joint ventures and marrying capital with providers.
Now, if we turn to one of the other sectors focused on in the report, student accommodation. Everywhere you look in Dublin, certainly there are huge new facilities going up, purpose-built facilities for students. But there's more space and more potential for that because only about 12 or 13% of all students are currently housed in purpose-built accommodation.
Yeah, I suppose traditionally we would have had some purpose-built student accommodation. It was typically built by the colleges themselves on campus. This is quite a different concept, and again quite similar in design to some of the built-to-rent type models with large number of facilities for students. So purpose-built student accommodation, PBSA, is the new acronym. There are 13 schemes under construction in Dublin today, another 8 to 10 with grants of planning. So it's part of the solution to fixing the housing problem, because at the moment students are fishing in the same pool as everybody else in the private rented sector. So if they're getting a large volume of purpose-built student accommodation purely for students, that's going to alleviate pressures in other areas.
Briefly, Marie, we're all getting older, so there's also a big attraction, I presume, in building purpose-built facilities, whether healthcare or residential or whatever, for an ageing population.
Yeah, huge demand as well for healthcare facilities, particularly primary healthcare centres and nursing homes. In the last census, in the period from 2006 to 2011, there was a 19% increase in over 65s in Ireland, and that's only going to continue growing.
Right, I'll try and keep it out of that as long as possible. Marie Hunt, Executive Director of CBRE, thanks indeed for joining us. It's 6:53 on Breakfast Business, and Sarah Quirk of Goodbody joins us to review markets. Sarah, some people calling today Super Thursday. It's not a football match. It's the UK election. It's James Comey giving his testimony in Washington, and it's the ECB meeting. The UK election, I mean, obviously nobody knows what way that's going to go, just the way the polls are going. But I suppose the main impact will be, depending on how it goes, will be on sterling.
Yeah, and I suppose it's quite an interesting one. Initially, when Theresa May actually called the election, it seemed like something of a political masterstroke. You were looking at the polls, which were saying that you're going to get this enlarged Conservative majority. And then that was reflected in stronger sterling. So it was seen as a positive for the UK because you'll have a stronger government going into the Brexit negotiations. And what you're going to see really is that currency continues to be the biggest indicator for risk. So as we saw the gap narrow in the polls between the parties, again, what you saw was weakness in sterling. So as we go today, now you're still expecting that there's going to be a Conservative majority, so we would expect that it's going to be positive somewhat for sterling, but the risks are to the downside. If you do get a surprise result, you'd expect that's going to negatively impact on the
sterling. Some commentators yesterday saying that in the unlikely event, I suppose at this stage, but still a possibility that if there was a hung parliament, sterling could fall to perhaps 92p against the euro.
Yeah, I mean the risks are very much to the downside, and as we've all seen in recent times, polls aren't always 100% what you're going to get. So the risk is very much to the downside there.
Okay, well, some of us will be staying up late tonight to watch that. Now, the ECB meeting today, are we expecting much out of it? It probably is the last meaningful meeting before everyone goes on holidays over in Frankfurt and in Brussels.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what we're expecting today really is no policy change, but we're looking very closely at the commentary. So what we've seen quite recently is that the data out of the Eurozone has been getting stronger, and also a number of the risks have passed. So we've come through the Dutch elections, the French elections. So, you know, those kind of pressures are starting to ease. And at the same time, then, because that's happening, people are wondering, are they going to start talking about tapering QE, or is there going to be any sort of time frame put around that? But at the moment, that still looks a little bit unlikely, because when you look at the inflationary pressures that are there in the system, the core inflation, so you strip out energy and food prices, that's at 1%. So still significantly behind.
It's way below the target, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So when you have those sort of competing variables, what you'd expect is that they're going to be a little bit more optimistic in terms of the commentary and the outlook for the economy, but keep the policy unchanged for the moment.
Yeah, and the possibility that they may take out that keyword downside that we were using about the UK election there, that
exactly,
had been in their commentary.
Yeah, so they could be a little bit more optimistic in terms of their dialogue.
And I suppose generally for around Europe as well yesterday, that this bank deal went through in Spain, that Santander bought Banco Popular. So I suppose general buoyancy, I suppose, in the banking sector, which is good for AIB, I suppose.
It is, as it's coming down the line, very much so.
I know you can't speak about it because good buddy you're involved. The other, I suppose, volatile dynamic in the markets at the moment is the price of oil. And it fell by 4% in value yesterday, down to its lowest value since November, I think.
Yeah, big shock yesterday. It fell almost 5%, so down to $45.76 a barrel. And that comes on the back of out of the US, they've come out and we've seen crude oil rising 3.3 million barrels.
Which was a surprise, I think. They didn't expect
inventories
to rise.
Yeah, so it followed 8 weeks of decline. So it was a really big shock to the system. And whenever you see a big shock to the system, you see those kind of large pullbacks. And what it really calls into question then is, you know, quite negative sentiment into the sector. And you're thinking, you know, is it really the oversupply that's going to be driving the market at the moment in the energy sector? And it also sort of undercuts the OPEC deals and what they're trying to do in terms of managing.
And of course, the spat that's going on in the Gulf at the moment between Saudi and the UAE and Qatar not helping in terms of
exactly.
Of
so
security,
it's just adding
oil.
More fear and more risk into the sector.
Okay, Sarah Quirk of GoodBuddy, and I see GoodBuddy was voted by some users as the best stockbroker in Ireland last year. So congratulations on that. I'm not sure what your competitors who come into us every day will think about that. But anyway, congratulations on the day and thanks for
joining
us. That's it from Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall for this morning. I'll be back with bulletins at 7:30 and 8:30. If you missed any of the programme, you can catch us up on newstalk.com on podcast. But coming up after the traffic news this morning, it's over to Paul and Shane with all the stories of the morning on Newstalk Breakfast. Stay with us.